Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Well, Tom, that was kind of a weird live news story during the show breaking type situation where WWE advertises a six-pack, six-way match that included Doudrop and Nikki A.S.H. and Becky and Asuka, but also Sasha Banks and Naomi, and various reports, including Fightful, saying that what WWE said on air is true, that Sasha and Naomi walked out of the building, and they had to change the match because reportedly Sasha butted heads with Vince McMahon over creative plans for the match. Corey Graves, kind of in the role of shaming Sasha and Naomi for being unprofessional in increasing intensity as the show went on. A weird situation that led to then a different type of main event and perhaps a different challenger at Hell in a Cell than was planned. Reportedly, Naomi was supposed to win the six-pack challenge. I haven't confirmed that independently, but I like Asuka and Belair. I think that's a chance to be a good match, and it feels like a fresh matchup for WWE right now. I guess just kind of with your overall take, Tom, on how that all played out and how WWE handled the audible that they were thrown, or are you suspicious something else is going on?
It is a surprise rumor. I would not have pegged Naomi for that. All due respect, of course. I appreciate her talent. I've enjoyed her over the years. But overall, I think this is something that I'm going to need a bit more information on to comment on fully, although I will say that exactly what you said is exactly how it came across. My understanding of the Sasha Banks and Vince McMahon relationship over the years is that they have actually been rather close and had a good working relationship, but it really did sound on air, especially after, honestly, what an excellent job they did at the top of the show, running down everything that was going to happen, culminating with this six-pack challenge announcement. It really did feel like Corey had been instructed to shame Sasha and Naomi, particularly Sasha being the bigger star there, on air repeatedly as they said why we were now getting the main event we were getting. Of course, it's very difficult for me to be objective about Asuka. I just adore Asuka, so I love that she's back. But again, the Naomi rumor that you're informing me of is a surprise to hear, because I was thinking we were probably heading for either Becky Belair one-on-one in the cell, which I would have put with Charlotte and Ronda if they weren't doing the Charlotte arm break angle over there. But now, I just looking at how the match was laid out, I was starting to wonder, are we going to get a triple threat out of this? And I feel like that's probably where it's heading now. So that's where my head is at, and I can only imagine that what was kind of an undercurrent on the show was this untelevised story that Graves was just informing us of as it developed. I can only imagine that's what a lot of people are going to want to ask about, but I really don't feel like I should say anything unless I have further information. I can only speculate as far as I already have.
Yeah, I mean, it could be such a wide range of things. It could be Sasha and Naomi were told one thing, and then it changed, and then that was 3 weeks ago. And then they were told something else 2 weeks ago, and it changed. And last week they were told something, and it changed. And this week they were told, and they just finally, Sasha's like, had enough of creative changing. And so it could be that, because, I mean, I'm just pulling from the idea that I know wrestlers are often frustrated with, last-second changes in terms of what Vince McMahon wants planned for the show. It could also be Sasha Banks has a big head and decided she's going to wants to grab the reins of creative, and it was screwing up what Vince McMahon and the writers had in mind, and that she was out of line, and Naomi just sort of felt like a sense of duty to join her. I mean, literally, you can just, and I kind of came up with two examples that are kind of on the extreme end of it's all Vince's fault, it's all Sasha's fault. And it could be any number of things. I do not have intel on that. And so I'm not going to pass judgment. Either way, I think that there are times where walking out on a promoter right before a live TV show with all facts in can seem like a gutsy, admirable stand to take, putting money and job and reputation at risk. And then it can also sometimes be a petulant, unprofessional tantrum that's overreacting because wrestlers, you know, sometimes think they know what's best and not understanding who's signing the paychecks. And they overreact to something that's either misunderstood or simply a difference of opinion. And frankly, the boss wins on a difference of opinion. You know, I mean, that's just sort of what you sign up for. Otherwise, go start your own company and book yourself like Cody did, you know, which is the story he told with Seth. Well, sort of. They leave out a big chunk of it that Jimmy Smith apparently in the last week was caught up on. And we'll talk about that as the night goes on. So, yeah, but, you know, all things told, except, I thought that it was a good adjustment, you know, midstream to just do a one-on-one match. But I guess, I mean, if this were just real, everyone would be going, well, what about Doudrop and Nikki A.S.H.? Why don't they get a chance? I hope, I do hope that they address that next week and that Nikki and Doudrop are like, wait a second, we didn't walk out. Why did we lose our shot? And then, Tom, maybe that's what leads to a triple threat with Becky, Doudrop, and Nikki, and then Becky wins, and then they do turn it into a triple threat. I could see that being an avenue to get to the match that you hinted at.
Yes, I was also imagining that one way or another, whether it involves Sasha and Naomi returning to television or whatever it involves, I was imagining that this will probably involve Doudrop and Nikki. And I like your proposition. I think either way, this, you know, we'll see Becky complaining to Adam Pearce once again. She'll be complaining about the mist and you know, of course she was about to cheat herself, and that's why Asuka's win feels justified, even with the use of the mist. Bianca on the outside saying that's what you get. After, of course, Becky also intentionally trying to get herself a disqualification victory as well by antagonizing Bianca. So yeah, I think I could absolutely see Pierce being antagonized by Becky into saying like, okay, look, you know what? Doudrop and Nikki lost their shot, so now you're going to be in some sort of situation with them, so you can earn your way into that match. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. The main event felt rushed. I can't imagine if that was a six-pack challenge, how they would have fit that into that 10, 11, 12-minute slot. But it didn't feel like anything else went overly long on the show. So I guess I'm curious how they were going to tell the story if everybody was there.
Yeah. I suppose you could have shortchanged Gable and Ezekiel. But yeah, you're right. Everything else, like I can't imagine that they didn't plan for Lacey, considering everything that they've been doing with her. Building to her return to the ring, I can't imagine that she wouldn't have had that spot right before the main event. Maybe take some time from Gable and Ezekiel, but I share your thoughts, and if on the face of it, you know, you can say that this isn't the first time we've seen this sort of thing from Sasha, but even saying that out loud on a live show is like, I got to bite my tongue a little bit because we just don't know yet.
Well, we do have a statement from WWE issued on this, and Fightful published the statement. WWE did not send us a statement, so I don't think it's a press release as much as a request from Sean Ross Sapp for comment on his report. So I'll read the statement, and it gives us a little more details here. It looks pretty consistent with what I said earlier. This is WWE's version. When Sasha Banks and Naomi arrived at the arena this afternoon, they were informed of their participation in the main event of tonight's Monday Night Raw. During the broadcast, they walked into WWE Head of Talent Relations John Laurinaitis' office with their suitcases in hand, placed their tag team championship belts on his desk, and walked out. They claimed they weren't respected enough as tag team champions. And even though they had 8 hours to rehearse and construct their match, wow. They claimed they were uncomfortable in the ring with two of their opponents. even though they had had matches with those individuals in the past with no consequences. Monday Night Raw is a scripted live TV show whose characters are expected to perform the requirements of their contract. We regret we were unable to deliver as advertised tonight's main event. So besides just shattering any kayfabe in that statement, it feels, I won't say, uncharacteristically sounds, isn't quite the tone I'm going for here, but it feels more direct and brute force pushback out of a statement written out of frustration and exasperation with those two wrestlers and not really holding back in sort of throwing them out of the bus publicly and also introducing the idea that it wasn't the outcome of the match per se that they're upset with, but that they claimed they weren't comfortable in the ring with two of their opponents, which creates a sense of was there a veiled threat or was someone taking liberties or did something happen outside of the ring that made them think something could happen inside of the ring? I mean, this paragraph number 3 out of 5 in this statement opens up a lot of room for conjecture. Tom, your initial reaction to this?
Yeah. If true, I'm tempted to just leave it at wow. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I know I'm repeating myself. I don't feel like it's something where I should speculate further. You know, we've all watched all 6 planned participants in this match for a long time, and they all have, you know, really good histories as far as what we've been shown on TV, but anything can happen interpersonally backstage. So I think it's one where we just have to wait to see what other information might come out about it, whether it's over the course of the week or whether it's, you know, 5 years from now in a tell-all.
Or during the show as I text people.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Interesting. All right. Well, this is fun. I will say I am not – I would not be shocked if we never see Sasha and Naomi in WWE again. Like, my sort of hot take on this is based on the tone of that statement, WWE's really pissed off right now. And I don't think if they felt there was grounds for how Sasha and Naomi acted that they would have issued that statement. I think they would have been more vague. They would have kicked the can down the road. They would have left it, you know, made it be clear that, you know, Sasha and Naomi walked out. But they got ahead of the story, you know, by putting out more detail than I believe had been reported, at least certainly what I've seen and heard. So I think they're upset, like, really steaming right now, steam coming out of the ears of Vince McMahon and Laurinaitis, and I could see them wanting to set an example, which is very interesting given Naomi's connections to others in the company and Sasha's star power and presumed big match future. It's just, this is interesting. So anyway,
agreed.
Yeah. Well, let's pause and introduce the show. I certainly invite our live callers to join in on this conversation, give their thoughts on the statement and what their initial thought is on this, and, of course, the rest of the program. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, May 16th, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the founder, editor, publisher of the long-running Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter and also the website pwtorch.com. And the host of various podcasts on various Torch podcast feeds, including the free Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast and post shows, and the VIP exclusive Wade Keller Hotlines, The Fix with Todd Martin, Everything with Rich Man, post pay-per-view roundtables, and more. And we are here talking Raw tonight. We'll talk some SmackDown because the shows are tied in with what's coming up on Friday. And my co-host on today's program is Tom Staub. He is formerly of the PWT Talks NXT show, and now the host of a couple VIP-exclusive podcasts. Tom, welcome back.
Thank you so much. Yes, NXT 8 years back, we are currently talking about the rise of Sasha Banks. She's she's heading into the second round of a tournament to crown the second-ever NXT champion. And if you remember where her NXT run leads, we will have a lot more to say about Sasha moving forward in the next 2 years, year and a half at least. And then on the monthly bonus points podcast, there is a new one out. It came out at, I believe, on May 1st was when it dropped, covering April in WWE developmental. So about 2 weeks old now, but still relevant, primarily focusing on wrestlers who are in the breakout tournament ongoing on NXT right now. So if you want to get ahead of the game, you can collect your bonus points and listen to that on PW Torch VIP, get a background on all of these wrestlers who are much lesser known. And last time I was on with you, Wade, you asked me about the show and asked if what I was taking away from my perception of what WWE is currently looking for in its recruits. And on the spot, not having put thought into an articulate answer, I feel I gave a pretty terrible one. So I put a little bit further thought into it, and I looked into, I sort of cross-referenced some statements that Triple H has made recently and some statements that the strength and conditioning director, Sean Hayes, has made recently at the Performance Center, Sean Hayes. And I will be going into that a little bit more, not like a deep dive, but I will be going into that a little bit more as I continue to profile current WWE trainees in the upcoming May episode.
Very cool. All right, well, let's move on talking about Raw and give out the phone numbers and email address. If you're live streaming the show, you can still give us a call. The number is 347-215-8558. That is 347-215-8558. A lot of you are already listening in but haven't pushed one. If you do, if you've already called in and want to join the conversation tonight, you can do so by pushing one on your keypad at any time during the show. You're all encouraged and invited to do so. We always invite and encourage first-time callers or infrequent callers to join us along with our great group of regulars. You can also email us if that's easier and better for you. The email address is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Tomorrow, by the way, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net will join me, and we'll record our Blue Logo Show, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast flagship edition, on a Tuesday this week, and that means you can get your email questions and comments in for the mailbag part of that show at any time between now and early afternoon tomorrow, that being Tuesday. So the email is the same, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Your chance to set the agenda and direct the conversation that Jason and I have tomorrow. And that show will drop later on Tuesday for everybody to download. If you're only subscribing to this, the Red Logo Show, the Blue Logo Show is also available. This is a post show. That is the podcast. They both have the Wade Keller name on them. So just search Wade Keller and subscribe to both. All right, so let's get to it. We will begin. I got to do this. We got to begin with Kyle from Baltimore. Yes. Sasha in the news. Kyle, how's it going? Welcome.
I don't know what to say. I'm just kind of confused. It just came out of nowhere. Everything came out of nowhere. First, the announcement saying that this would be a Dumbwick and Tender match, and Sasha and Naomi were a part of it. That was confusing because they're originally on SmackDown. Why are they going to go after a Raw Women's Championship? But that was a weird. So that part was already was confused. I was like, well, whatever, fine. But then all of a sudden, they say that it's going to be. They just say they're no longer on this. Going to be in the match, and now it's going to be a one-on-one match between Asuka and Becky, and I don't know why Asuka had to win. Why can't it just be Becky Lynch? Can you just do the rematch and just move on? It was right there in front of them. She would have done it. That's a whole other thing. I'll get to that in a second. I don't get that. But yeah, I just don't. I'm just. I don't know what they're doing with Sasha Banks. I don't know why they do this to her. But I don't know if she's frustrated because she is a tag team champion, so tag teams at all, and she should be the big stage right now, facing Ronda Rousey for the championship. She should be the champion, and maybe it's because also too last year she was in the main event with Bianca Belair. And then this year she was in Beyond in a meaningless tag team match at WrestleMania, even though she won the titles, which she probably won a match at WrestleMania, but still. Why is Bianca in a second championship match with Becky Lynch? But then Sasha, a year later, is in a tag team match that there's no women's tag team division at all. Why did you create these belts if they didn't plan on even having a good tag team division? It's really a men's tag team division. So I'm just worried about what they plan on doing. If Sasha leaves, I'd be like, not again. Because I went through this in 2019. I was already feeling not good about it at all. And then she finally came back and said, fuck, thank God. But now it's doing this again. I don't like this. I watched this woman since I was 18, when she debuted on Raw. Same as Becky and Charlotte, but mainly because of course Sasha and Becky, my two favorites. But I watched them too when they first debuted in 2018 on Raw. I had no idea who they were because I didn't watch NXT at that time. And then having them come out, I was like, they look like top stars, mainly Sasha because of that entrance and the way she looked. And she's like, she screamed top star. I was like, there she is. I don't know who she is, but let's go with it. And then throughout the year, she was booked, wins the championship, loses it the first time she defends it, wins it, loses the first time she defends it.
Yeah.
So that was like the spark there. And then it's like, and then also the tag team thing as well, when she first became a tag team champion with Bayley, they lose it the next month at WrestleMania, and then that's why she left the first time, I would think. And then it's like this entire thing over and over again. She was like, it was fine, and then now something happened again, and I think also too, again, like I said, it was because of the fact that she was, again, in the main event last year with Bianca Belair in that great match to the very next year, not on the show. And also too, not even being at SummerSlam neither, as well, just being off SummerSlam with no explanation. Still know why she was off SummerSlam last year to replace Becky Lynch. So all of that, I just don't understand why this is even happening right now. It just came out of nowhere. I was completely shocked. I didn't know what to think. My mind was going all over the place.
I would have been shocked if you weren't shocked and dismayed over this. I knew we had to go to you first and have you just let off some steam a little bit. Tom, what do you think of how Sasha's been portrayed? Like, do you think there is grounds for Sasha to, I mean, Kyle listed a lot of things that on the surface, you know, can be interpreted as, wait, they're not giving her the respect she deserves. And as you say, you know, we don't know the full story. And so you hesitate to take a strong stand, but just looking at what actually has made air the last couple of years with Sasha, do you think that she has, if she doesn't think, oh, it's on her, and she's just been a willing player, that she should be disappointed? Or do you think WWE's actually handled it well? They've elevated the tag team titles. They've elevated Naomi, arguably, by linking her with Sasha. And as they're doing with Randy and Riddle, sometimes you can take some top stars, elevate them in a tag team situation for a while, and then they seem fresher when they go back to the singles ranks rather than having them just work singles matches that are third, you know, not world title level. And that can sometimes define someone down. So anyway, Tom, just your thoughts on how Sasha's been portrayed and booked the last couple of years.
So subjectively and objectively. Subjectively, you know, I respect Sasha Banks. I think she brings a lot to the table in a relative sense. But when I hear people just worshiping her as if she can do no wrong and that she should be booked on top of the world, I don't quite see it. Not that she shouldn't get her runs. She's in that echelon. But
can I say for me,
I
to defend myself about it,
yeah,
real fast about it, because to me, I just watched. I just watched the shows. I don't really pay that too much close attention to reports or anything like that. I just watched how she and from no, from from when I very first started watching her, I never really watched any other any like review shows or any report. I've never done all of that. I kind of like recently been doing that, just recently, like the past like few years, like say in 2020 I started doing this whole. I was doing all the watching all these reviews and hearing all these people talk about the inside stuff like WWE, about who the credible people about this type of stuff. So that's when I started knowing about that, was back in 2020. But so for me, when it I just watch as a fan, and I just watch like as in knowing that I'm a fan of Sasha, I'm a fan of Becky, I'm a fan of Bianca, just whoever I'm a fan of, I just like. And I just see how to portray TV, do I like her or not, or whatever, how they, if, it's like, comparing to, it's just, for what I see it, it's like, from watching Sasha, from when she, I'll say when she first became the Raw Women's Champion, and then she lost it the very next month to Charlotte at SummerSlam, so I was like, well, that was weird, and I heard it was the Tony Andrews, okay, so I just shrugged it off. But then it happened the second time, in the main event of Hell in a Cell in our hometown, and losing it again, I was like, what is happening? And it kept on doing it over and over again. It was like, why are they doing this? So it was really that third time or second time that she lost it. And I don't know. Yeah, I'm going over the place. So I think for me, I don't know. I'm just talking as a fan, I guess, about it.
I got you. But I did want to hear what Tom was saying. I might need to interrupt if it's to make a quick point or something, but it's just to go on another.
Okay, yeah.
Rant. We welcomed your first one, but I do want. Yeah, that's. I know. Yeah, I know you're emotional. That's cool. Tom, back to you.
Yeah, and hey, man, I'm glad you said that. Let me be clear. I do not think you are wrong. If it is your opinion that you really like her, that's great, and you are not alone. And you're a fan of the company, or you're a fan of the WWE TV. I am too. That's why I'm watching. I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't like it. So I guess I'll leave the subjective as stated that, you know, I feel like she's been booked to where I view her. And unless there is more credence to the suggestion that she has issues with other participants in the planned match, then being a tag team champion and being featured in a main event in contention for the singles championship at a pay-per-view doesn't sound like a bad thing to me. But objectively, that's where your view comes in, Kyle, from where I'm sitting. Because again, you are not alone. There are so many people that just worship the ground Sasha walks on. And even though I may not understand it to that full extent, she does have these throngs of fans. So you would think that you'd want to capitalize on that. And I know she seems to have quite a big ego, and that may not fly backstage in today's WWE, even though I've argued on several occasions, like Bray Wyatt, even though he's reportedly difficult backstage, look at what he's bringing to your product and the money that he's selling in merchandise. Maybe you Shawn Michaels that guy. Maybe you say, you know what, he's a pain, but let's just deal with him because he's a benefit to our bottom line. Maybe that's what you should do with a Sasha Banks, even if she does have a big head. If that is indeed true. So I think that's where I sit on it. Where personally, I'm not upset, but objectively, it is a bit confusing that she hasn't been more prominent. But I sit here Googling people in the Marvel Universe who have blue hair, not that they can't put her in a wig, but she's already got the in with Disney Star Wars. I'm seeing here that there's a character who has blue hair who comes from a different universe, and she's the child of one of the current main characters in the new movie that's out in theaters. So there's your in, Sasha. Audition for that role.
When it comes to they said that she's been doing. I'm not really a Star Wars fan, so I don't really say anything about that. But I don't know. I think I was.
She only has two lines. So.
Okay. Well, I kind of really don't care to see her as a wrestler less than an actor more than a wrestler. So that's not real. So I don't know. I'll leave it at this. I'll move on. I think it's just sad the way she's been booked the last few years. And I thought it was I didn't really expect this. This really just came out of nowhere. I was like, whoa. So I don't know. I hope everything will be all right and this will hopefully blow over. But if not, like, that's sad. He just let her go without, again, without, and for good this time, and that'll suck. As far as the main event, what I don't really like or kind of get or was, because I was convinced that Becky was going to win anyway, even if it still remained a four-way, I still was convinced that Becky was going to win because that made the most sense. They usually like to do the rear start backlash. I was thinking they were going to do it here at Hell in a Cell, just to do it and get it over with and have Bianca retain. That's what I just assumed because it just made the most sense to me. But having Asuka win, that's like, okay. I'm not really that big of an Asuka fan, so I mean the match could be fun, but I'm like, okay, I'm not that invested into the match like I would have been if it was with Becky. So I think, and I guess I get what they're doing with their story perspective, saying she's been on a losing streak now after losing the title, where she's kind of like Seth Rollins, don't know what to do, where she's acting crazy because she can't win a match like Seth Rollins has been doing lately. So I don't know if they're going to come back together again. Hopefully not, but that'll be it. But they might actually. What if that will end up happening? They're going to come back together probably because they're both losing big-time matches lately. Yeah. But I guess my thing about that is that where does Did you think that was going to be Becky and Bianca again because of the fact that that's what I feel. And but with Asuka winning, how would that play out though moving forward with Bianca and Asuka because of Asuka's lack of speaking English and always saying no one's ready for Asuka, but yet then what? So how is Bianca going to make this feud interesting in the weeks ahead with this feud now?
Well, yeah. No, that is really interesting because if this was the last second call, WWE didn't really have time to think that through. So if they don't add Becky to the match, then yeah, you got to make this interesting. I'm all for WWE making it interesting by having Asuka be a little more serious. Like her act. I mean, Tom, what do you feel about her act? Even dating all the way back to NXT and when they started kind of trying to figure out what to do with Asuka and to have her. You know, I don't even know how you describe how she acts. But they decided to lean into that, and they have even more so in the main roster. Is that something that you would dial back to do a one-on-one match with Bianca and show that there's another side to her, or would that be jarring and incongruent and not necessary? Because frankly, this is probably going to be the third or fourth from the top match. Well, I don't know for sure. We don't have the full lineup fleshed out, but probably third, fourth, fifth from the top of a Peacock premium live event. It's not vital that they, co-headline or anything like that with a heel face matchup with great promos. So, I don't know, I probably threw six questions in at you there.
Well, with Asuka, that's where the subjective-objective flips, because I know that a lot of people find her interview segments kind of obnoxious and limited and cartoonish and overblown, but I just find her personality infectious, and I cannot get enough Asuka. I am one of those people who like watches her YouTube channel and sees her goofy personality, and so I love when that natural humor that she has seeps through into her television persona, which it has more and more often. We spoke over the course of the pandemic that someone like Shayna Baszler might be deprioritized because she works better in front of a live crowd, whereas Asuka is so bombastic that she gets more of a run during that phase of television. Like I said at the top, it's difficult for me to be objective with her because I personally wouldn't want her scaled back, but that does always seem to be the storyline on such a short-term build to a premium live event match in a time when it seems like the non-major arena premium live events, like the non-open-air arena premium live events, are going back to an era when the television was more prioritized. And so we have novelties that aren't as important as what's actually happening on TV. Like the cage match between Omos and Lashley being more important than their backlash match. Or, you know, the prime example of the main event at Backlash being changed, which could have been for other reasons, but it feels like it felt like a large sacrifice to me, and we might get there, but it might have felt like a small sacrifice to them, because doing it on TV probably stands to be more profitable to them now. So that tangent aside, I think that you probably wouldn't want to alter Asuka for, what is it going to be at this point, a 2-3 week build to this match, assuming that it would be a one-on-one match. I think you could get away with a babyface here and you know, a handshake finish with Asuka putting over the newer, strong wrestler. That's exactly, you know, I'll
hope so.
Repeat
That'd
my point
cool.
from the top that I, yes, and I feel like that's where, yes, Asuka's in the match. We're enjoying seeing her back because we haven't gotten her in quite a while. But the storyline is really about Becky's desperation and not knowing how to handle herself now, not being champion again for the first time on TV in years.
I can definitely see that because it makes sense because the story is about Becky and Bianca I just think this would make the match more, I guess, somewhat interesting, which I don't know why he would do that because it would be Becky and Bianca only, but whatever, it's fine. The match should be good. So I guess we'll move on it was Alexa. I like the fact that now Alexa has new theme music. Okay, I'm.
Yes, yes.
Because if that was the case, why did you bring out with new music last week? I don't know. That was odd. I'm ready for her to just, I don't want to say move on, but just, what are you going to do? Has to still do this, continue with this feud with Sonya? This has kind of been decisive. She just beat her twice in 2 weeks now in a row. So I don't know what they, well, not decisive, at least tonight was more competitive than last week, but still, see, they are clearly going to build Alexa back up as his top baby face, which is cool. A cool thing to see. Can you see? I can actually see. Well, I was gonna say having Alexa and Becky go face each other as a feud, just because this it still wanna take a break with Becky and Bianca. Or since they brought Lacey Evans to Raw and she's a heel, I don't know what they did tonight. Can you do something with Alexa and Lacey? Which I think that'll be a weird dynamic. What do you think about that, about the whole Alexa second match with Sonya and all that stuff with her, where what's the plan with Alexa moving forward?
Go ahead, Tom. What do you think? Another interesting women's topic here.
Yeah, speaking of Asuka not really being at the center of her segments here, but it's okay because we're just happy that she's back. It's the same with Alexa right now. I feel that, you know, I totally agree with you said with what you said last week, Wade, that, you know, this is a fine spot to bring Alexa back in. It, you know, can't really argue with it too much, but it could have been more significant because she's really just acting as a vessel for what is actually Sonya's story. And it doesn't feel like Alexa's on a major launch pad right now, because commentary was really selling that Sonya had her down off of a spine buster and through her own tactics, you know, like Sonya inadvertently distracted the ref and didn't get the fall, but commentary was really acting like Alexa was beat there before getting an opportunity to win off of a DDT. So but again, it's fine. I'm happy that Alexa's back. I think that it's a nice segue out of what she was doing, that she is now, she's coming out to her old music, or she was. She returned with her old music. She's dressed as the goddess version of her character, but she's still holding the Lily replica that she got from the therapist. So, you know, we're connecting that thread, you know,
is that just
because
they have boxes and boxes and boxes of Lily dolls? Like, I wonder if that's actually a strategic character move or more. We gotta unload these things.
No way. This is creative integrity. They really care about the through line of the character. But yeah, and, you know, and then they give her new music tonight. It seems like, you know, it's almost surprising that Asuka hasn't gotten new music. Everybody's getting new music in this prolonged transition away from the people that wrote all of those new themes for a few years.
Well,
there, CFOs. Oh yeah, well, you're right. Yeah, there are still a few that are lingering around. But a lot of these themes have felt more generic, and some of them have been directly pulled from, like, royalty-free libraries. So it was nice to hear that Alexa got, like, a high production value thing that still seems to – I'd have to hear it again, but I believe the intro still sort of has the tune of her old music and then goes into, like, the female punk era type thing. What would you – the only terms that I can think of to call it are inappropriate to say on the air. I think it suits her well. And yeah, so I'm okay with that.
Well, I think I had to listen to her a few times a little bit. I was kind of, at first I was just like, I kind of listened to her again, like a few, like an hour or two ago, a few minutes ago. I was like, okay, I just got to get used to it, I think. I think that's why I got to get used to it. Got to hear a few more times in the next few weeks, I guess, to get. Because I think
yeah,
I like
sure.
it, but I'm not sure yet. Still deciding about it. So, yeah, I just hope that they, because clearly she's, you know, I think she's going to be the top baby face. Well, I won't say top baby face, but like that's the second baby face ahead of behind Bianca. And because, and I just hope she, I would probably see a Becky Alexa feud, just have to see what that will look like, to see what will happen if that, to see that, you know, maybe that's the direction they'll go with, maybe with Becky is having her feud with Alexa, maybe. That could be interesting.
The new kids, I agree with Tom, though, that if they wanted Alexa to be a top talent, having her come back as just sort of like, not wallpaper, not, but like it wasn't all about her. You know, it was, she's back, but this is more about someone else's storyline that's been going on for weeks or months. So there's kind of mixed signals as far as how serious they are about her. And I don't know that Alexa comes across to me as a wrestler who, and I don't like the euphemism talent. I know WWE uses that, you know, corporately behind the scenes, and it's fine. It's not, you know, bad, but I just think, you know, they're wrestlers. We don't need to use the corporate speak. And I think she's a wrestler who isn't really, to me, giving off main event vibes in terms of what she does in the ring and her character. I'm not saying she can't get there, but I'd say if WWE is not clearly focused on that, then I don't think we should expect that. Because to me, it's not like it's a shame. It's like, oh, my God, Alexa deserves way better. I mean, she deserves better character and storylines, but I don't think she deserves to be the centerpiece main event wrestler. She's not Becky. She's not Bianca talent-wise in the ring. But she's really, really talented in other ways where she can be utilized better than she has been. So, yeah, interesting.
I would say that actually on NXT 8 years back right now, we are covering Alexa's debut. Just over the past 2 weeks, she has had her first two matches, first against Alicia Fox and then against Charlotte as part of this tournament that's going on in our retrospective 8 years back to the day as it drops. And one of the things I feel I've noticed about Alexa watching her live from that point and going back and watching her first couple matches here is that she's very careful she's always been very careful to only focus on the things that she does well, which you would think would be more of a broadly accepted mentality, but so many wrestlers are kitchen sink wrestlers nowadays. Alexa knows what she excels at, and those are the things she does. So I think what she does extremely well, but in the end, it's never been about the wrestling for her, and the only times she's found herself in top angles is when it's more about the storyline and more when she can get herself over in storyline-focused segments or promo segments. And Yeah, I think so. She would have to find herself in that situation again. And could she handle her side of a 12, 13 minute affair with Bianca Belair? I believe absolutely. But it would have to be more about the storyline with her.
Yeah.
All right, Colin, any closing words?
So my final thing is about, is about Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins being Seth Hell in a Cell. I said before, Seth Rollins badly needs to win. I understand they want to build up Cody Rhodes, but where will that leave Seth Rollins? He has been, he's been losing these big time matches to Cody Rhodes. If he loses again, it just seems like a bad move, but is it also a bad move for Cody to lose? So I don't know. That's why I'll leave you with that, but thanks for a call.
All right. Thanks, Kyle. Certainly more happened on the show, Tom, than we've covered already. I have, by the way, been texting people in WWE and have a little bit to add to the Sasha story. I'll go probably in more detail in the Wade Keller Hotline for VIP members, but I'll get back to that as this show progresses too. So everyone stay tuned because I got some things I can relay. I don't want to overhype it, but some clarifications on things. But first things first, Kyle brought up Seth and Cody. Does Seth need to win the third one? Can Cody afford to lose, or should Seth lose, or should the cell just like a panel falls out of it and that's how it ends? Like the opening match tonight, the main event / opening match.
Oh man, why is the inconclusive finish always something that I think of last? It's always that good escape hatch. Spoilers for if we do chat about it. I loved the opening, match. I thought that they did such a fantastic job with the presentation of it down to every little detail. I thought, yeah, we may get there. I suppose I could see them doing that, but my rhetoric surrounding Cody and Seth has not changed since the build up to Backlash, where it's just like, man, Seth can absorb loss after loss. He's fine. Cody right now is a priority. It was honestly weird hearing him say, nothing sounds better than Cody Rhodes, United States champion. It's like, wait a second. You said that you wanted the WWE title. What do you mean nothing sounds better than the United States championship? So that, that's the mission he's on. Don't slow that down. Just let him beat Seth again. And in a different context of a match, and then clean break away from that so Cody can do what he's going to do at Money in the Bank.
I still had Kyle on, so we heard a little background noise there. Let me ask, what do you think of the Cody – the Cody presentation through the first month and the Cody – promo tonight and how they talk but don't talk about AEW. Like, mostly don't talk about it. But they're not like pretending it didn't happen, but they sort of talk around it. But we had the reference to Stardust and losing. And I think Cody's really smart. I mean, I don't know that he's as smart as he tries really hard to make him seem with some of the language and words he uses in his promos, but I think he's really calculated and thoughtful, and I don't mean calculated in the loaded way it sounds. I think he calculates what he says and in a way where things are deliberate and thoughtful. And talking about how Seth came into the Shield and won his way to the top, whereas he was jealous and a skeptic and then lost and then had to go reinvent himself elsewhere, and that's where sort of the references to AEW comes in. I think it's a good blending of real life and storyline. And so I thought some of Cody's syntax was a little off. He's not super well rehearsed in memorizing promos, and I'm sure he really wants some creative control and input on his promos. And so it's often a hybrid with talent depending on what their preference is. But this was the biggest Cody promo to date that didn't just revolve around, I'm the shiny new toy and I'm introducing myself. So I'm really curious, Tom, what you thought of the content and the delivery and preface it with how you've thought Cody's journey has worked so far.
Yeah, briefly restated, I just feel like WWE has been very consistent in presenting him as a big star, and I feel like it has translated even in things that we don't see on television, but we hear about that even on shows he's not booked on, like SmackDown's, he's working the dark main events because WWE is just saying, like, this is the guy you want to see, so we are going to give him to you even though he wasn't on SmackDown tonight. I think that the signal has been very successful there, and I feel Cody's been living up to every bit of it so far. And, you know, of course, I'm not somebody who I always have to pull myself back, like, okay, I have not historically watched AEW. I have only I sampled at the beginning, and then I have only tuned in when it was a Torch responsibility to cover something or to be aware of something. And the very so simply stated, I have only seen little bits of and heard a lot about the various reactions to how Cody was presented in AEW. So seeing the promo tonight, it felt to me like probably the closest he's done back on WWE yet to what I heard he was like on AEW for the most part. And I, you know, I'm sure there are certain key differences, but for what he laid down tonight, I liked the clever turns of phrase. I felt it was well delivered. I noticed a syntax error or two as you did, but I thought it was very clever in how he delivered a lot of it, because he's telling his true story in the context of WWE kayfabe. So it's the story we know is real, but it fits into the story WWE wants to tell. And on one hand, you know, like, yes, they're dancing around the AEW thing, I think sufficiently. I'm going to say, like, on one hand and then on the other, but they're really just two reasons why I feel they're making the right move here. On one hand, you don't want to acknowledge the competition in so many ways, except for in, you know, certain petty things in the 90s and other examples. For the most part, it's been WWE's rule to not acknowledge competition, and I feel that is wise from a business perspective. Don't educate your audience to the competitor. While on the other hand, I've recently, for various reasons I don't need to bore anyone with, I've recently really minimized my social media exposure lately, and as a result, I have heard nothing. Like, I've almost forgotten that AEW exists. Because
wow.
I just don't see anything in the world about it anymore, unless I go on Twitter, where I have the algorithm understands that I follow wrestling and talk about wrestling on there, and so that's what it feeds me. And I stop logging onto Twitter, and I don't see it at all. So that's even more reason to just be like, don't bring it up. There's no reason to this. To so many people watching, it just doesn't exist. So. I feel like I have understood that approach. I really felt that Cody acquitted himself well tonight, and I am one who can appreciate a good vocabulary. And as we know, Cody is an avid reader. So he's picked up some nice words over the years.
And in the quote, somebody said the quote that he said as a result of being an avid reader is like a line from some movie or something. I wish I could remember exactly what it was, but
I think I think it was on Everything with Rich Fan, and Rich said it was from Kung Fu Panda or something like that.
Oh yeah. That's what it was. Yes. Yeah. So you gotta be careful when you're, you know, Cody's smart, but he isn't the smoothest at not making it seem like he really wants you to know how smart he is. And if you're going to be obvious about it, that's a bit of a setback. It's even worse when you use words wrong or you claim you're well-read and you're quoting Kung Fu Panda. So you just got to be a little careful. I'm trying to think. Let me talk just briefly about what I've heard, is a little bit about Sasha and Naomi, from some people in WWE that I've been trying to covertly text with while we're doing the show here. People are just confused about why Sasha and Naomi left. I'm told it is from multiple sources, definitely not a work. I know there's always people rushing to the front of the line to go, everything in wrestling's a work. WWE acknowledge it on TV. By definition, it's a storyline. You can read the press statement. It's obvious it's a storyline. And sometimes you're going to be right. Sometimes you're going to be wrong. In this case, I'm told definitively it's not a storyline. Don't mean I won't turn it into one. I'm not trying to hedge there. I'm just saying WWE might do that. But I'm told from trusted people it's absolutely not like some sort of, you know, reenactment of Austin walking out. No wonder that was. Two, Naomi was, I've confirmed now independently with a couple people, Naomi was scheduled to win tonight, which is what's puzzling and perplexing to people about why they walked out. I was told there are not known issues between Sasha and Naomi and the other four in the match from a couple people who would know, probably know, would know. So certainly not established for weeks. You know, it was something that happened like, you know, chatting, texting each other and yelling at each other 3 hours before the show. Well, that's different. So that's kind of, again, so that's where it's kind of weird that WWE said, oh, they felt uncomfortable in the ring. What does that mean? It's not like Doudrop or Nikki have a reputation for taking liberties, you know, with anyone in the ring. They're not, they might accidentally, you know, Doudrop might accidentally land hard on someone. And maybe that's what they're getting at, that it's not malicious. It's more, I'm worried she's going to injure us or something like that. So that part's speculative. But the sentiment from a couple people is they're just putting this on, putting it on as overstated. Their inclination is to believe that Sasha turned something into more than it should have been. And they're not sympathetic to her. That's kind of how I'd frame it at this point. But yeah, it's definitely the buzz right now among people in WWE trying to figure out what's going on. So that I'll look over my text later and before recording the Wake Up Hotline, see if I can add more to that, and I'll give more of my opinion on it. But Tom, any quick updated reaction to any of that? If you don't have to, but if you do, you can react.
No, just say hi to Dana Brooke for me.
She's very excited about her 24/7 championship reign. When I text her, all she does is talk about the belt. I never get any information. It's just, I can't believe I'm a former champion. I can't believe I'm a current champion. I can't believe I'm a friend. No, totally making all that up. All right. So let's get to another call here. By the way, if you're listening in and you want to chime in, our number is 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on the switchboard and lets us know that you want to join the conversation. If you are not typically streaming the shows live, you are invited to do so. WadeKellerPostShow.com will bring you to a page that has a link to the live shows after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown each week. And you can also on Twitter, at PWTorch, look for a direct link to the live stream that we post near the end or right after those respective shows end. And you can also find links in my TV reports Monday, Wednesday, and Friday nights at pwtorch.com. At the top and bottom of the report, I include the phone number, the email, and a link to the live stream. All right, so let's go to William in San Diego next. William, thanks for holding. Thank you for calling. What's on your Raw agenda for discussion points tonight?
I'll switch it up a little from the topic du jour for a moment and talk about the opening match. I think you guys alluded to it a little bit earlier on. I thought it was a decent match, but I kind of wish that when I called last week, I had set this on record. I kind of saw that finish, you know, coming from 10 million miles away.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the finish that they like to go to when, you know, they put two big men inside a steel cage, and they don't really want to put one over definitely in a definitive way over the other. But I wouldn't be so irked by it if they had just done it, and, you know, that's the way it happened. But what I found more amusing and kind of a little bit irksome was that the way they treated it, like, this is, oh, my God, there's no precedent for this. Is this does this count? Is this legal? Does Bobby Lashley win? Yes, he won, yeah. It's just, I'm going to exaggerate a little bit for a point, but it's almost like if, you know, we had two roll-up finishes tonight, and it would have been like if the second time when Ezekiel rolled up Jack Gable, like if they had gone up to the commentators and going like, does that count? Because Jack Gable wasn't knocked out. Can they do a pinfall if the other person wasn't knocked out and they have to like go to backstage and you know, do some investigative journalism until they realize that yeah, it does count. Even though we just saw it happen like, you know, a few matches ago, it kind of felt like that to me. Like we've seen that kind of finish happen a dozen times, so it was just kind of silly the way they treated it. But I don't know. Yeah, what do you guys think of the match and the finish?
So yeah, Tom, it's your invitation to go into more detail.
I suppose so. Good to hear from you, Michael, my good friend. No, of course, William. Good to hear
oh
from
my
you.
God, hang up.
So yeah, no, of course you're right. You know, we've seen this with various other spots that get repeated as like the big man spot that they can do with the materials that are readily available, like, you know, inflating the body, you know, something under the ring so then it can collapse when they want to do those spots. And then every time they've done it three or four times now, you know, they act like it's the craziest thing they've ever seen, and it's never happened before. The same way that the title unification on SmackDown is being called one of the biggest matches in the history of our business, I think is what Jimmy said. So, you know, you're right, and I may just be desensitized to that now, and admittedly that the way that spot was orchestrated with Omos seeming like he was trying to remember exactly which direction he was supposed to run, or like, oh wait, is this the part where I'm supposed to do that MVP shout something so I can remember?
Well,
it
would have been easy to tell because there was this one camera angle where Cedric Alexander was climbing up the cell, and Bobby Lashley was also there, and you could just see that part of the cell like, you know, like shaking, like it wasn't properly attached. And it was like, oh man, okay. That confirms that's how this is going to end.
Funny.
There you go. It's like, you know, when Kane's going to interfere because you see his pyro taped to the turnbuckles. And of course it always breaks that direction because that's the one direction where there aren't human beings. But, so I, forgiving that, I thought that they did an incredible job. WWE always does an incredible job with their post-produced video packages. So that building up the rivalry to come to a head here, and it does.
Oh, you broke up, Tom, at either the end of what you said there or near the end.
Oh, shoot. Well, we're having internet issues all over the place tonight, but fingers crossed that doesn't happen again. I just, you know, their post-production is excellent. So they show us that video there, and then we go to the live camera angles, which I thought this time it's been cartoonish before, but I think this time they were doing favors to Omos. And I always enjoy the visual of somebody who's already massive, like Bobby Lashley, being dwarfed by somebody else who's extremely large, which, may be an easy thing to accomplish when you just find a big guy, but it's a visual that does work for me. I understand why they aim for it. And meanwhile, you've got MVP talking up the whole thing, and then when we think we're about to get it, they, in my opinion, the commercial break kind of dulls things down because you come back from commercial and you're like, oh yeah, this was happening. I'm not as excited as I was a moment ago. But I liked that they poured some gas on it by doing the pull apart and having Corey Graves going like, oh my gosh, this is the whole reason we were supposed to have a cage match to begin with. And I felt like they really did an excellent job of making it seem like a big deal. They did an excellent job of putting a lot of decoration around Omos so he could only do things that he was confident in doing. And as a result, apart from that final spot, I felt like he lived up to his side of things. And, you know, they did the thing of with the interference from the outside that you can always expect in cage matches, giving Bobby a big mountain to climb. And I found myself in a position of, also the key of not putting Bobby on the mic since we know that doesn't tend to go very well. So all of that eliminating of negatives, accentuating of positives, and then telling the story that even if inadvertently, Bobby finally got to a point where he realized you know what, I've got to outsmart the giant rather than try to outmuscle him. And now we see what the next chapter is. So all of that worked for me like a charm.
I think it shows trust in Lashley to put him in there against Omos. It also shows more trust in Omos to put him in a match of this length. Not that it was epic, but they really have figured out what Omos is capable of. And what he does do now are things within his skill set that he can pull off without looking super green. And that just wasn't the case not that long ago. And he's come along enough to be able to do things that giants in wrestling do in a way that looks better than some of the worst giants who got pushes in the past. And that sounds, you know, like not the best compliment, but, you know, it's like in basketball, you know, tall centers in basketball usually aren't on NBA teams because they're also great dribblers and great at assists and great at three-point shots. Carl Anthony Towns, an exception to that. But with Omos, he's not selected because of his athletic gifts and timing. He's selected because of his size and his look. And so it's naturally more likely somebody who, if he had that skill set otherwise, would not have made it out of training camp. But because of his size, they want to rush him into a position to do things. And then in wrestling, you have somebody create a lot of movement in the ring, which someone of Lashley's size, oddly, is tasked with doing, because usually it's not him creating all the movement. But I credit Lashley, but I also credit Omos for making progress, and I credit the match architects for knowing what Omos can do, and I think structuring a pretty compelling cage match that accentuates what, you know, Omos's size and his power, and that issue the idea of what's the finish here in a meta way or in a storyline, you know, kayfabe way, just fans going, I can't imagine who's going to win this one. And they just weren't ready to do, you know, I shouldn't say they weren't ready. They chose not to do a finish because Cedric could have distracted Lashley and shoved him off the cage and then Omos crawls out the door. I mean, they could have, that would have been whatever. But they did something that had that visual, you know, spectacularness to it. And WWE likes to do that. You know, they have a history of doing that. That's part of the formula of how they promote. And this was an occasion to do that. And then it allowed, you know, Lashley to win. I do echo your guys' thoughts that I like that the announcers talked about it as if, is this legal? Because they're acting, you know, like this isn't a traditional way to win a cage match. And I think, you know, those are natural questions to ask. But yes, of course, you know, if your feet hit the ground first and the structure gives out, that doesn't mean you have to put up the wall again and restart the match. You know, Lashley won. But I'm fine with the announcers acting like, whoa, will this hold up? Is this okay? And, you know, it makes it feel more uncommon and novel that you know, Lashley and Omos are so powerful and big, respectively, that finish happened. William, I'll throw it back to you.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the main event that we're going to see on SmackDown. How are you guys feeling about it? Are you guys excited going into it? Personally, I'm having kind of a little bit of a hard time, you know, getting invested in it. Mostly because of how, you know, it just seemingly got scrapped out of nowhere before Backlash with, like, no real storyline explanation, and we still kind of don't have one. So I'm like, going into it, I'm, like, a little skeptical that we're even going to get like a proper finish. And even if we do, you know, if they do deliver and we, by the end of Friday, we have a unified tag team champions, that's not something that I'm personally looking forward to, just because I was already against it when it was, you know, Brock Lesnar versus Roman unifying the titles. And it's not like I've been proven wrong, or anyone who is skeptical about that choice has been proven wrong. So yeah, I don't know. How do you guys feel going into Friday?
Tom, do you want and do you expect a unification of the tag team titles? They are overtly advertising that will happen, but that doesn't mean it will. And how do you feel, just kind of how do you feel about them? Not, I guess it's a bait and switch. I mean, it's the definition of it. We're going to hype this. I mean, it's not a traditional one in the sense that they told you ahead of time it wasn't going to happen, but now they're going back to it. The match that they built up for weeks took away from viewers. Now, I presume, well, actually, the bell will ring and there will be an actual match with some sort of finish on Friday.
So knowing that it's entirely possible there's some reporting that I'm unaware of, it felt in the moment like they weren't sure if they were going to have Roman, and then they found out, oh, we can use Roman on this. We got to get him on the card. Let's just put him into this match that we've already been building, even though even with the biggest star in WWE in the match, it felt like a lesser match because they had already done such a fine job. Not meaning like, oh, it's fine, but like, fine. Like they did such a fine job of delivering the build to the, you know, what was going to be the Backlash main event. So yeah, it really diminished my excitement for that event. But like I mentioned earlier, I would also understand if they looked at it and they said, you know what, with this Peacock deal, you know, we get what we get from the Peacock events, the premiums that are less premium than something like a WrestleMania or a SummerSlam or now a Money in the Bank. We get what we get, but we could do more business with this if we put it on Fox. So I could definitely understand that mentality as the approach to premiums and TV shifts yet again in the history of the wrestling business. However, indeed, they derailed the build, and now that they are trying to cook it up again, it's just not exciting. I was excited before. Either way, and they absolutely, no matter what they're saying, you're right, they absolutely could have an escape hatch where nothing of consequence really comes out of it, but prior, when it was going to happen at Backlash, I fully expected the Usos to win. Now that it's going to happen on SmackDown, I fully expect the Usos to win. Before, I didn't care that I feel like I know the finish. I'm excited to see what feels like an important match of great significance. Now, I'm kind of like, the Usos are going to win. Do I really need to see this? So derailing it really hurt it for me.
All right, William, back to you.
I guess I'll go back to the topic of the day and apologize a little bit for maybe a bit of an incoming rant. But, you know, without knowing the full details, obviously, and both sides of the story, my initial gut reaction to the story was just I was a little bit disappointed and a bit mad, mostly as a fan of Bianca, Asuka, and Becky. I just felt like they were put out there in a bit of a no-win situation. I was excited for the feud the first time when Asuka came out, and I just felt like tonight they went out, and the story of the night wasn't the actual, number one contendership match. It was all the stuff that was going on behind the scenes, and they just didn't feel the feud itself going into tonight, regardless of if tonight, you know, hadn't happened the way it happened. I don't feel like the feud was ready for a one-on-one match yet. It felt like they were building to something bigger or potentially better at Hell in a Cell. So it did kind of feel like we were deprived of a little bit of what could have been a good first match between the two of them. I do think that, you know, on a technical level, Becky, Asuka, they always deliver. They're always great together. They have great chemistry. But, you know, the crowd didn't seem all that invested. And I don't know that, you know, people watching at home weren't paying that much attention with everything that's going on behind the scenes. So, I don't know if you guys have anything to add about that.
Yeah, Tom, what do you think?
Just from where I'm sitting, just speaking for myself purely, the curiosity over like, oh, what could this Sasha and Naomi thing be, didn't override my interest in the main event. And, you know, I just, all three people who were out there, including Belair, sitting at ringside, you know, I'm just so enamored with their talent, and I love seeing what they do. So I feel like they were able to make chicken salad out of the situation that they were given. I can definitely level with you on, even though I didn't feel it in the moment, I think you really have a point that Asuka and Becky going one-on-one, while perhaps it could be argued as one of those situations like, oh, we had the announced match taken away from us, we'd better give them something even better, that could have been juicier. And I'll just look at, you know, my daughter last week, she only pays a very cursory attention to what's going on in WWE television. But when Asuka and Becky were, I forget whether they had a segment together or whether they were just talking about one another, my daughter is in the room and she goes, oh my gosh, I remember what happened with them last, you know, before Becky left. Oh, this is going to be good. And even just that little nugget was enough to get her interested in their story. So yeah, I think you have a point there.
All right, William, anything else you want to add?
Yeah, just closing quick, maybe nitpicky question / point. What do you guys think about the countdown to Cody that they had? You know, in 1 hour, 43 minutes or whatever, you guys are going to see Cody. To a certain extent, I do see the point of, and I kind of agree with the point of, you know, perception is reality. If we treat Cody like a big deal and he has all the pyro, he dresses up like $1 million and he talks like he is well read or whatever, then yeah, people will perceive that he's a big star and he will therefore be a big star. But I think you can go a little bit too far into it. And I think maybe for me, doing a countdown to a promo, it does cross a little bit that line for me.
Yeah, William, you're in the same place I am. You know, Cody's problem, one of the issues many AEW fans had with Cody, I believe, was how grandiose and opulent everything he did was. And from the over-the-top entrance and the pyro and the Cody Vader elevator and the suits and the big words, sometimes misused or unnecessary, and all of that along with some of the content of his promos, it came across like, okay, you sure think highly of yourself, don't you? Well, now it seems less fun to cheer for you. And I think with WWE, it's what William says. There's if you treat Cody and frame him like a big deal, that conveys, and I write about this and talk about this a lot. You know, I think fans and viewers, even casual ones, are aware subconsciously. I guess you can be aware subconsciously. It affects people subconsciously, or they're aware consciously, that if Vince is into somebody, then they should invest in them. And if he's not, you know, invest in them at your own peril. And I think it's, you know, complicated human psychology, how people decide if someone's a big star or not based on clues they're given and how they're framed. With Cody, there's no ambiguity. You know, he's being framed as a big deal with wins over Seth in the presentation. But does that potentially lead to a backlash where even WWE fans, who I think are predisposed to not embrace the baggage or carry over the baggage that he had in AEW, they want to give him a clean slate. But even people willing to give Cody a clean slate might run out of patience with him if he seems to have a huge ego and is unself-aware and is now being shoved down our throats the way Roman Reigns was. Cody can battle that and offset that with good matches and being likable and saying things that resonate with fans as the truth, and they're thoughtful. And if they identify with him, just as many AEW fans did, as somebody who loves pro wrestling, he's ambitious, he's successful, and I like that he shoots straight with me. And it can work, and I think so far it's working. But when you have a countdown clock to Cody Rhodes' matches, or in this case, the countdown clock to his promo, but also announcing when his matches are going to take place, it almost, it's not like it's a spoof or a play on, but, Tony Khan told me when I interviewed him last November when the Cody controversy started to brew, you know, he told me, well, you know, Cody, if he's being cheered or he's being booed, as long as he's drawing minute by minute, as long as he's drawing ratings, I'm okay with it. And it almost seems like Cody walked in and said, I will draw ratings, but you have to tell people when I'm on. And Vince's like, oh, I like that idea. Let's see if that works. You know, you put your money where your mouth is. We're going to tell people when you're going to wrestle, when you're going to talk, and then we'll see if that helps us draw peak ratings for you. I did a cover story in the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter. The digital copies and text versions are available for VIP members, and you can read the paper copy for paper copy subscriber about a month ago. And I looked at the numbers. And, you know, the very short answer, and there's a lot of nuance to the numbers that I wrote about, is Cody is drawing about as well as top stars draw, but not, you know, he's not worse, which is good, but not better either. And so I don't really know what the goal is otherwise at this point, unless they think Cody's a draw or they're trying to test whether he's a draw. Because either way, if that's their goal, the risk is it feels like a little too much. It feels like, oh, we're supposed to just be on the edge of our seat and stay tuned to see Cody? Really? And I think there's a chance, quote, even WWE fans, who I think are going to be more loyal to the guy who jumped back to their home brand, might tire of this. So, Tom, your thoughts on that specific aspect, which, you know, was moved up to a new level this week with an actual countdown clock.
Yeah, there's a lot there. It's a good thing that Sonya and Alexa didn't go like 25 minutes, because then Cody wouldn't have been able to hit his spot. No, there is a lot there. It was kind of funny that they put the countdown up in the corner during their entrances. Like, oh, okay, so you know, you're reminding us that you know how long these matches are going to go. I do sense the same kind when you mention Vince and that possibility. It does feel like they may be deliberately testing the drawing power by saying, okay, our ratings are what they are. They fluctuate sensibly, but you know, we pretty much stay in the same, we stay steady. We go along. If we're descending, it's, you know, it's along with the television viewing trends. So let's go ahead and tell, it's not going to hurt us, certainly, to tell people when you're going to be on. So let's see. We are going to let them know. We're going to make it very clear when your entrance is going to happen. So let's see if it makes a difference. So there's that. And as I describe it, it almost seems like it's the most likely thing. The other way I look at it is just viewer retention. And in saying, I mean, in this gargantuan three-hour show, saying when something's going to happen almost feels like an invitation to be like, hey, if this is the only reason you tuned in, this is when it's going to happen. Go ahead and turn off the TV. Come back later. You don't have to watch. So I think there's that risk to it, as opposed to just saying, hey, Cody's going to be on the show. And then you're like, oh, well, I guess I'd better stay tuned in to see when he's going to come out or what he's going to do. So those are the other ways I look at it. But I think, moreover, I agree with your theory, perhaps, that what is the word I want to use there? But whatever it is, what you said, that Cody can counterbalance it by leveling with the fans more and feeling like he's being real, whereas, Roman just felt like all we're seeing is booking, and you can just see through all of that. And John Cena, before him, you know, the Super Cena name didn't come out of nowhere. It just, you know, the Superman character was not interesting at that point for a lot of people. Obviously, the dude became a huge star, but you know, he was one of the reasons why during his main, you know, the Ruthless Aggression era, why I fell out of regular viewership. He was one of the key reasons. So, I think Cody can counterbalance that. In kind of like in ways that that Cena learned to over the years, but I think there's a lot there. It's I think this may sound silly, but I think even something as small as having Seth Rollins, the heel in the feud, come on the screen and sarcastically say, "Hey, Mr. Countdown to Cody," I think putting that complaint in the whiny heel's mouth, then like we, as human beings, we just sort of like, we push back. We're looking for things to run counter to, or we're looking for things to disagree with, or, you know, and a lot of times I feel like that's how we naturally forge our opinions, especially in the social media era. And so even if we were thinking that, having the heel whine about it, I think then makes it like less of a cool thing to put out there and continue thinking about. Maybe that sounds silly, but I feel like we've seen enough from social media to see that tracks a little bit, actually.
William, let me throw back to you for anything else you want to bring up before we move on.
This might be kind of a silly point, and maybe even a little bit anti-AEW, although I don't intend it to be that way. But the more you guys talk about it and the more I think about it, it does seem kind of weird to, you know, treat it as advertising when Cody is going to be on the show is going to bring in more viewers when, you know, Raw does have roughly half as many viewers as or double as many viewers as AEW does. And I understand that the argument could be made that, you know, maybe Cody brings in some of those people who left Raw to go to AEW when AEW came around. But isn't that almost kind of like WWE admitting defeat a little and validating the existence of AEW, saying that, yeah, actually they did take away some viewers, and yeah, they have made an impact in our viewership. So thank God we have Cody here to bring in some of those viewers. I don't know. I guess I'm reveling in a little because that was just something I was thinking as you guys were talking about it. But I'll let you guys get to all the callers. Have a good week.
Thanks, Wayne. Appreciate it. Yeah, last week, Raw's first hour, their peak hour, drew nearly double the average viewership of Dynamite 2 days later. Dynamite's on a downswing in viewership right now, with 840,000 last week, 833,000 the week before, after being in the 900s for a month or so before that, and topping a million occasionally. So, you know, is losing Cody part of that? I don't think Cody is a big enough part of AEW and a valuable enough part of AEW in recent months for his departure to be like this. You know, it's not like Roman leaving SmackDown where you're like, okay, my reason for watching's gone. You know, AEW is very ensemble, deliberately so. Well, either by design or by instinct, that's how Tony Khan is booking AEW at this point. But part of what makes a wrestler draw is just, and it doesn't take to, this is not meaning everybody's interchangeable, but if you're a top star and you add freshness to a show that's been stale, you're going to benefit from simply being, you know, the dryer sheet that adds freshness to the load of laundry. Not just because people love dryer sheets, but they just like freshness and it was stale. And, you know, but I don't think Cody is the level of star who just comes in and makes a huge difference like CM Punk to AEW was supposed to be and to a degree was. That said, he's talented and charismatic and exudes a charisma and a sense of star power that I think fans are embracing to a degree that he's obviously valuable. I don't know, Tom, what do you think about William's last point and just Cody's impact as a draw and wrestler's ability to have an impact on ratings, both going up and down when they leave and arrive?
You know, it is one of my main pet peeves, finding old dryer sheets laying around the house that have fallen out of loads of clean laundry. And so maybe that's how Vince McMahon feels when someone is no longer the shiny new toy. He's walking through the proverbial WWE city, and he steps on an old dryer sheet and says, "Oh, what is this doing here? Thought I got rid of this thing." Let's see. Yeah, no, I think that is absolutely in the background. Like, I didn't say it outright, but that was absolutely in the background. William's point was of what I was saying about the ratings, that I think regardless of where AEW is, they are drawing the number that they are drawing. So there's just a business acknowledgement of like, okay, this guy was one of the stars. And I agree with your assessment that Cody leaving should not be perceived as something that would be theoretically too damaging to AEW's drawing power. But, you know, this guy was one of the big stars on that show. So let's see if we can, you know, draw some of that audience, whether they left entirely or not. I'd have to be, you know, looking at Nielsen's deepest data to know exactly what that crossover is. Yeah, I think there's something to that. Although, you know, it's felt, it almost sometimes feels like Roman is an anomaly in an era when the brand is bigger, and that, you know, they have the slots that they want people to slide into, and they need to find the people that that fit those slots. But it is much less about the individual wrestler nowadays. So it does feel like Roman being, I mean, the guy's just getting such great reactions. I think I've mentioned it on like every post show I've been on with you the past four post shows, but he, you know, I watched a few Attitude Era Raws and SmackDowns recently. And yeah, I mean, people are just flipping their lids for The Rock, but then watching that and back to back watching today's TV with Roman coming out, it's easy to just think like, well, it's not as big as it was, you know, in the heyday of the Attitude Era. But depending on, I wanted to say depending on the town they're in, but I feel like pretty consistently Roman's getting those reactions. His reactions remind me of what I reminded myself of tuning back into those older episodes when I was looking back at them a couple months ago. So anyway, yeah, that's just a detailed way of saying that he does feel like an anomaly in a time when it's more about, you know, you're going to see Barnum and Bailey's, not necessarily, you know, Joseph Smith, who's on trapeze tonight.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. I want to go back to the cage match and a couple emails on that topic. JB from Detroit says, I thought it was a very interesting, in quotes, interesting decision, to say the least, to open the show with a Lashley Omos cage match. The false finish to end the match let the air out of the room, in my opinion, and put a bitter taste in the viewers' mouths for the rest of the show if they decided not to stop watching altogether. Oh, but the Cody countdown. Also, at what point do we get diminishing returns from the buildup to a steel cage when we can assume almost every time that nothing will actually get solved? I also think it was a curious decision to have a cage match on Raw so close to Hell in a Cell. As always, love the show and go VIP. So a couple things there that covered a little or haven't covered. I like opening Raw with a big match. I was worried when Cedric came out that it was going to be one of those situations where, you know, ring entrance, hype, video package, ring entrances, oh, no, we have to delay the match till later. To me, that you can't do more than once every 2 years. Like, I mean, without people going, yeah, you say the match is happening at the beginning, but it's probably not going to. Although their top hour is usually the first hour and their weakest, the least viewed segment is the very end of the show. So on occasion, doing that, you know, might help you hold viewers to the end, but I think you also lose goodwill and frustrate them. But I don't have a problem with cage match opening the show. I think we're, you know, beyond the point where, especially on a weekly TV show, the pay-per-views, that PLEs are different, but where the biggest match has to be last. And I think they had a strong enough main event that as long as you bookend with the show with two big matches, it doesn't really matter which happens which way. That also gives them a chance logistically to build the cage before the show goes on the air, and then open with a visual. And by the way, I loved Smith, Graves, and Saxton standing in front of the cage, kind of like MMA style, boxing style, where the ring is behind the announcers. I wish they did that every week. I wish they shook things up a little bit more. I wish we had the interview on the stage like we did last week with the audience in the background that they did with Theory last week. I wish that was a weekly staple. I like changing up the look of things. But anyway, I'm going off point a little bit here. So I'm fine with that. The finish, because it's Lashley Omos, yes, it's a grudge, but they're trying to communicate how powerful Omos is. So the cage falling, the wall of the cage falling, didn't come across exclusively as a cop-out to a traditional finish as much as a cage isn't strong enough to even hold these two people in. And so, Tom, you can react to any of that, and also, what do you think Lashley's challenge next week is going to be? Are we going to have multiple Hell in a Cell matches? Or are they going to do a Hell in a Cell on TV? Or what is going to be Lashley's challenge to MVP and Omos next week?
Yeah, I agree that I liked the visual, and I thought it was a nice touch that once the red light was on, Byron like nervously looked back up over his shoulder at the cage. And, you know, I've thought a lot about the logistics of setting something like that up as well, and I know the way that they do it on the main roster is different than they do in the smaller buildings that NXT runs, but, you know, I've seen them build that cage a number of times in NXT. And even in NXT, they've cycled through different means of securing it to the ceiling, building it in segments and securing it to the ring. And I sort of live saw, like, whether it was at a taping or whether it was them trying to figure out how to, like, okay, let's show something backstage and then cut to commercial, and that's the time when the cage is going to get built. And then usually, yes, they would open with one, so they would have the time beforehand to build it. But my point that I'm getting at is that they got that down to a science over the years. They became so quick at putting together that cage, and I haven't quite memorized all of the new names that they've given to the referees because they recently renamed everyone. But the FKA Daryl Sharma inherited the role of running point on that from Drake Wirtz. And so he's the one who will, like, be in the middle of the cage and directing all the other officials as to where to put the segments. And it's impressive to watch. And there, you know, there was even that, I don't believe it's there anymore, but there was that phase during the, like, fight pit looking era of NXT during, you know, now that they're in the performance center, where they had it, like, mechanized coming down from the ceiling. But anyway, I always found that interesting, so it's hard not to go off on that tangent. But I overall felt the pacing of the show tonight was agreeable. I liked how it all was paced out and bookended. Again, I was satisfied with Becky, Asuka, and I found myself anyway more focused on that than the background goings on and curiosities there. They've done this with or what you suggest about the possibility of delaying the match. And I had the same thought when Cedric first ran out. If you don't do that a lot, I can find it effective. I don't remember whether I was on with you or not when they did it with Big E and Bobby Lashley, but I loved it then. They hooked me with that match happening at the beginning, and then they said, you know, no, you gotta wait until later. And speaking of viewer retention, I felt like that was a good tactic because I felt like the angle was hot. That's just from where I was sitting, just theoretically. The reason I bring up my daughter's reaction to Becky and Asuka is because if one person is thinking it, one would imagine that there are other people out there thinking it as well. So I found it to be sufficient. I mentioned what I mentioned about Charlotte and Ronda trying to think about, like, what match would be on, you know, a SmackDown Hell in a Cell. And that's the only one I could think of, but they're working this broken arm thing for Charlotte. So I was thinking that this one could potentially be the other Hell in a Cell match, because it would be odd at this point in WWE to do a Hell in a Cell pay-per-view with only one Cell match. So I could see that event being bookended by these matches, perhaps opening with Lashley Omos. It makes sense to me now at this point that would be the next step for this feud. Although, yeah, I mean, the reason they did Hell in a Cell on TV last time, also involving Bobby Lashley, was because it was set up in the Thunderdome. So why not? Whether they go to the trouble of trying to hang it in a different arena, or I don't know, I could look at the calendar. Maybe Raw's running in the same arena the following night. I don't know. But, anyway, that's, again, a long way of saying that is also where my mind's at regarding Bobby's challenge.
Well, let me read another email on same topic here. Zach in Texas. The first 42 minutes of tonight's show was a microcosm of just how bereft of talent or care WWE Creative is. The show opened with a cage match, which should have been the main event if it was actually booked well. MVP cut a completely unnecessary promo to fill up three-fourths of the opening segment, and then there's a pre-match pull-apart that led into a break because, God forbid, they start the show with a match. The match itself was Omos doing his trash fire attempt at wrestling while MVP and Cedric completely devalued the point of a cage. That finish, though, literally nobody looked good. Omos and MVP just standing there waiting for Lashley to win, and then Lashley acting like he did something. Well, there's that. The next segment was Ali's weekly reminder not to publicly ask for his release, as he was made to look like a goof with The Miz and Theory and jobbed out to Veer. Maybe the biggest problem, though, was the fact that Sasha Banks and Naomi actually walked out on Raw rather than participate in whatever shenanigans WWE cooked up for the main event. How bad was it created that Sasha and Naomi chose to walk out? That's one hell of an indictment on WWE Creative. Okay, So if people listen to the show, you know, kind of know Zach and his take on certain things WWE does. Tom, what's your reaction to – because if you contrast with AEW, you know, by the time WWE gets done with their, you know, three-minute intro video, we're 3 minutes into a match on AEW Dynamite usually, and by the time the first commercial break takes place that isn't split screen, we're like 50 minutes into AEW. It's a different pace. It's a different format. WWE takes time, and it's up to each to decide how they like it, to remind you why this match is taking place with a well-produced video package. Have somebody talk and get you emotionally invested in them or the rest of their representing or both, and add a little extra spice to things and build up the delayed gratification, ring entrances, bell rings, maybe an outside interference, a tease that the match won't take place, or someone's weakened ahead of time to give their opponent a leg up before the bell rings. That's not stalling. That's just a different approach to presenting a match that isn't, you know, the old Crash TV formula of we have no faith in anyone's patience to just sit back, relax, and invest in something. We just have to feed them high spots or feed them something fresh segment after segment and make sure nothing is too long, and we don't leave any two wrestlers or three wrestlers on the screen in any format for too long, unless it's a great match that people are going to be chanting fight forever and this is awesome too. And each format, I think, has its merits. I appreciate both existing. I don't think one is inferior to the other. I think they're just, you know, tacos and hamburgers. Like, it's just, there's a couple ways to do it. Now you can say, well, AEW could do what they do better. WWE could do what they do better. Well, of course, that's not the point. I'm not claiming either is doing what they are trying to do perfect, but they're doing it differently. But to just decry that WWE is just stalling and filling time and they don't have talent depth, they have plenty of wrestlers they can put on Raw. They are choosing not to because they want Lashley Omos to feel epic and not like something that just took up the first 12 minutes and now we moved on. Tom, your thoughts on that? And then after that, we'll move to what we have. There's a few things I want to hit rapid fire as we wrap up, but the Mustafa Ali Veer match is something Zach brought up, so we'll do that next also. Go ahead, Tom.
Okay. As I dismiss a text that's coming to me saying, what is this I'm hearing about Sasha and Naomi? you know, I was like, oh, yes, yeah, a little bit chatting about that right now, as a matter of fact. Hold on. The subject of objectivity comes up again. I feel like we've seen in the numbers that there is a cap on this kind of fan, but clearly there is a swath of wrestling fan who can watch the same springboard backflip in every single match and they just eat it up. And all due respect, if that's what you love, I don't understand it, but great. You're enjoying yourself. You're not hurting anybody else. Wonderful. To each their own. Even if the wrestlers are risking their health more, which is my bigger issue. But for me, this is emotion and story and character. That is why I choose to watch a scripted, a preordained, you know, athletic presentation as opposed to watching MMA or as opposed to watching a gymnastics competition. And sometimes I do watch gymnastics competitions, and I enjoy them for what they are because they're not trying to be anything else. But I need the build-up. And again, I loved how they built up this. I was not super excited for Omos versus Lashley. And they got me there in the span of a few minutes before the opening match, and I was very impressed as I detailed. But I have never said otherwise. I always 100% of the time prefer someone to come out and talk to me to open a wrestling show than for a match to start it. Because if you open with the action, it means so much less to me. Even if you told the story of why the match was happening on your prior show, that was a week ago, man. You got to get me invested again in the present moment. This is why pro wrestling is, this is one of the reasons why pro wrestling is what it is, the action, and of course, there are so many ways of telling the story with the action in the ring, teasing stuff early, paying it off later, blah, 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 blah. It's great. You got to learn that stuff if you want to be the best wrestler you can be between the bells. But you need the action, for example, and I've mentioned this a couple times on recent podcasts, so if people have been listening to me on VIP, sorry that I'm repeating myself, but the recent triple threat match on NXT Spring Break-In was a well-received match, but I didn't like it because it was just 10 to 15 minutes of fast and furious action with no story and no character whatsoever. It was just action for the sake of action, so thereby it's meaningless. I need the story for pro wrestling to work the magic that it should, that by design it is supposed to work. Oh, and Mustafa Ali, he's doing very little for me right now.
Before you shift to that,
okay.
Did MVP in the pre-match promo say nothing? Because I don't agree with that either. I mean, wrestling promo, like everything you said, but MVP said, I expect Lashley to put up one hell of a fight because he's tough. But the outcome is a foregone conclusion. And Omos will brutalize Lashley more than he did at Backlash. I mean, that's not saying nothing. You know, it's like, I mean, there's, you know, it's not like he's going to reinvent his opinions on Omos. He represents him. He said he's bigger, stronger, and meaner than Lashley could ever be. Right, but he's talking about the actual match. He's telling you, yeah, we know Lashley's going to put up a fight. Omos is going to plow through him like he does his other opponents, but he's going to win. And he's going to brutalize him. You're creating this visual image of what the heels are telling you is going to happen. And now if Lashley overcomes that, there is a psychological moment of triumph, that of satisfaction, that the smug MVP set the bar high out of confidence, but his man did not accomplish it. So it wasn't just wasting time or filling time. Like that, I wanted to emphasize that. I think there was a purpose to the promo that did more than just review things or repeat things. It was very specific to the match and what to look for. And I think WWE, and I know Vince McMahon takes a lot of heat, deservedly so for a lot of things, but I also know there's smart people in WWE, and Vince isn't an idiot either. I mean, he's flawed, but there are smart people in WWE and smart wrestlers and producers who work hard and understand the business and understand what WWE is trying to do, including the announcers. Corey Graves and Michael Cole do a lot of heavy lifting for trying to underline the beats and the stories and the psychological key moments that lead into and out of commercial breaks that a ton of thought is put into. And a lot of them are frustrated by changes that are made or broad philosophical frameworks of Vince McMahon, and they would do things differently. But within that framework, if you pay attention, it's clear there's a lot of thought going into a lot of the things that are said and the beats in the match and little subtle things that are done or real obvious, hit you over the head with a sledgehammer things that are done that are part of an ongoing story arc. And people focus a lot on drop storylines and whims and changes and throwing out scripts. But there are other things of quality that either Vince or his team or the wrestlers who are not low IQ, you know, robots, especially in a situation like this, are getting across to frame things in a way. And I sometimes I think like people just sort of think if you're, you know, Zach in Texas, who's, you know, more pro AEW, that there's nothing to learn from WWE. They do everything wrong, and it's like you can be have your eyes wide open at what WWE's weaknesses are, but also appreciate there's some things they do that AEW could learn from and that would better their product, and vice versa, obviously, too. I mean, it just goes both ways. Anyway, I just wanted to put that in there, Tom, because the idea that MVP is out there to just fill time and not actually say anything worthwhile, I think is needs to be corrected, or at least I need to push back on it.
Yes, I agree with every word you said. MVP was setting the stage for the story that was about to be told, and he is one of the savviest doing it today.
So, the aforementioned Mustafa Ali, Veer, Swerve, I did not know that wrestlers could change their match, change the referee on a whim. I do not like that. I like a little more internal logic, structure, rules of engagement, whatever phrase you want to use. I like more of that to my wrestling company. Same thing with not acknowledging Doudrop and Nikki had a match and now they don't have it. And why did Sasha and Naomi get to ruin that for them? So those things I didn't like, but All that said, did Mustafa Ali just get, you know, decimated and squashed and plowed through, or did they protect him by having a crooked referee and a distraction, and he lasted 4 minutes? Like, I think that was booked the way that I would expect Mustafa Ali to be booked if he was getting a solid push against someone who's getting more of a push and is still protected. It didn't seem like a burial to me. Tom, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, certainly not a burial. Ali, it's hard to tell what they're doing with him other than just trying to give Theory someone to beat who has a little bit more meaning than just, I don't know, wrestler C who doesn't have something going. Honestly, Tommaso Ciampa right now. There's no juice there on Monday Night Raw. So, I don't know, just for one example, or somebody who's adjacent to the storyline, even though he's working heel, just throwing that out there for the sake
for
of
sure.
example. But
yeah,
yeah, like, recently on NXT, they built up a sympathetic story for Dante Chen explaining why he wanted to beat Duke Hudson and why it would mean something to him and his family. And the Duke Hudson just crushed him. And I thought that was good because it made, you know, we haven't seen Dante Chen anywhere except for NXT Level Up since then. And he's been a standout, just to pass through that. People who listen to Bonus Point know that I have a high opinion of him. But it meant more to the heel to crush someone who had a reason to win. And so I feel like Theory's inevitable victory over Ali, seemingly inevitable, is that's just the role that Ali's story is serving here, which it's doing little for me. I feel like you really had to be following Ali on social media to understand this taking his ball and going home situation that he's being pinned with on television. You either could have chosen not to reference that at all, or what? I don't know, because what the alternative is now, The Miz is calling Ali a whiner. You know, he's just trying to be the fighting babyface, and I don't know. I just feel like he's been characterized as a whiner for unspecified reasons. So it's not doing too much for me there. I mean, I like that Veer is now being crossed over with another storyline, even though I suspect this is probably the last time we'll see him in this storyline. But again, comparing everything to the other podcasts I'm doing, NXT 8 years back, Mojo Rawley is constantly getting squash matches. He feels like he's on an island. I'm all for squash matches, but at a certain point, it's just like, this guy isn't on a journey. He just shows up unrelated to any other part of the roster. So then he finally gets a feud with Aiden English, and I'm like, all right, here we go. He feels like he's a part of the rest of the show now. And listeners of 8 years back will know that I still didn't think that went very well, but, it's, I like the crossover and the fact that Ali was permitted to seem like at least a little bit of a threat, more of a threat than other people have been so far to Veer, while getting the heat out of it at the end of the Theory taking the selfie with him in the clutch and Miz posing and everything. So, I think my overall take there is just that, you know, people have started to recognize the idea that if things go the way they seem to be intended to go, Austin Theory could be in the mold of being, quote, the next John Cena, which is something I've been saying about him for a few years now. So I like that path, and I like the corroboration that I've been hearing on that theory, no pun intended. And I, even though I have issues with the story, issues with how the babyface is being presented, and some of the same issues that you thought of, or had, I like that Theory seems to be maximizing the ingredients that he's given. Again, with the chicken salad, it's just like, okay, this is what they gave me on the run sheet. I'm going to go out there and get the absolute most that I can out of it. And I feel like that's what Theory did tonight. So that's the big positive that I'm taking away from all of that.
Okay, so the last couple of things, just I want to get your rapid-fire thoughts on the Judgment Day faction and the follow-up this week to establishing the threesome and also the invite issued by Edge for AJ to join the group, which I do fully expect not to happen. But Edge made the proposal. Your thoughts on that development this week?
I feel like every single time I talk to you, I'm going to have a different take on Judgment Day. Last time I was just rolling my eyes like, what in the world is Edge doing? I'm such a big fan of his, and even I can't go along with this, and it's so low rent. And over the past few weeks, it's actually been landing with me better. He's relied on cheap heat a bit, you know, criticizing the local markets. But, I mean, he's a wordsmith, and he's pretty darn good at it. So I'm currently on board and interested in seeing if this can really be the intended launching pad for, you know, Damian Priest and the even more promising Rhea Ripley. And whomever else they may add. It seems like there are more people coming. The name Tommaso Ciampa runs through my mind again. Did you also feel that they were suggesting the six person mixed tag was going to happen tonight before Los Lotharios came out?
No. I think they were just suggesting an alliance. We'll watch each other's back. I didn't think it was a hint that wasn't that was intended to get people's hopes up. They'd see something that they ended up not delivering on.
Okay, I was wondering about that, but in the end, I am in favor of, you know, if AJ and Finn are going to approach Liv and say, hey, our goals kind of align, let's work together. Give them a match against the Lotharios with Liv at ringside, so they can, you know, establish that alliance. I'm totally fine with that, and I was even a little relieved that we didn't get Judgment Day interference afterward.
Liv Morgan's overacting is always been an issue, but it's kind of getting to me. Her demonstrative body language and facial expressions, it felt like if she was entertaining a 6-year-old at a birthday party, it might have been appropriate. But as an adult, it just feels patronizing or tone deaf. Like, just act natural. Tone it down. Her ring entrance is her laughing in the entrance music. Her bebopping her body as she walks out to wiggle and jiggle and titillate her male fans. Who, it's just like everything is just turned up too high. Doesn't feel natural. And even her like pun or like not accepting AJ and Finn Balor's invite, only to then decide yes after the commercial break. It's just like, I don't know. Everything you weren't asked out on a date. You weren't asked to go on a, you know, like have a threesome. It was just like, hey, can we watch each other's back? And she acted, you know, she's produced act or acted, or her instincts are such where it just felt like everything is just way more than it needs to be. So I think there's talent. She has talent. It's just her acting isn't good, or her actions need to be dialed down. She'll pop off the screen in a, I think, a more effective way if she just turns things down in like halfway.
Yeah. The best part of any of that was AJ coming in and calling Angel and Umberto Los Creepy McGee's. I enjoyed that, but Liv is always better when she's under someone's wing, whether it be Ruby Riott or Rhea Ripley. She's always better when she's tempered as part of a tandem. And I mean, she's, is it 7 years in the company now? I'll know when we finally see her in NXT 8 years back. And perhaps at this point she was working backstage. I don't know if I've seen her as one of Adam Rose's rosebuds yet, in our retrospective, but she's been doing this for a long time, and I've said several times now that I feel 2022 so far has been her best year, because I've been extremely critical of her in the past, and I feel like she's been clicking with me much more, and I've been connecting with the story that she's trying to tell me much more in 2022. But I would agree that tonight, particularly away from, you know, working under, you know, with somebody like Rhea Ripley, it is reminders of why she has not clicked with me in the past.
And Ezekiel and Elias, I know, Tom, you're one of the few people who got to see those two team together in developmental before Elias really took off and Ezekiel went off and did some other things. And now that Elias has kind of stepped away, now Ezekiel stepped up. and is making a name for himself. He's you know, clearly a better wrestler than Elias, better athlete, more a little more sleek and athletic. Were you always more high on one or the other when you watched them in developmental as a brother tag team?
It is interesting how their paths have crossed and uncrossed over the years, and even when Elias was showing up as El Vagabundo, I always sort of suspected that it was Ezekiel under that mask. But I am happy to see Ezekiel back, because clearly their ring styles are very similar. You know, just meat and potatoes, nothing that's going to jump out at you, but when they've got the right opponents, it works out well. But at least with Ezekiel, you don't have the annoying guitar playing. So I don't know what Elias has been up to, but I guess if I had to pick between the two, I'm glad that it's Ezekiel. And you know, even though he's, I don't know what he's on about, Kevin Owens has been at least amusing in his quest to try to prove that they are actually the same person. And Chad Gable, and honestly, and Otis for his part as well. I enjoyed that. I want to say for the first time, I noticed Chad deferring to Otis a little bit when he was insulted, when Kevin Owens said, you're supposed to be smart. And he's like, but I am smart. And then like a puppy, like a kicked puppy dog, he looks over at Otis, who then reassured him. So I was quite amused by Kevin Owens as Chad Gable, which is what it boils down to in all seriousness with these segments. It's just it's KO and Chad being amusing, and that's what gets it by.
All right, and finally, Lacey Evans.
Yes.
Yeah. All videos, and then there's report. Oh, she's going to be a heel. They change course. You know, clearly she's going to be rejected, and they know that now. It's sort of a New Day, Honky Tonk Man, whatever thing where, yeah, we overdid it, and there's going to be some pushback, and so we're going to embrace that. And what was your – and I can't validate those reports. I just think, you know, looking at things, it seemed like they're either very unself-aware or tone deaf, or they're intending to do what – seemed like was the growing reaction, which is okay, enough is enough. What did you pull from her promo tonight? I mean, we could have led with this if we didn't have this other news, because Lacey's been such a big part for the last month and a half of TV with these autobiographical segments.
Yeah, let's see if I can zip through a summary. I've covered, you know, Lacey debuted around the time a couple months before. We started the PWT Talks NXT Daily Cast, and we covered Lacey a lot. If you go back in the archives, we talk about her just about more than anyone else. And I was always extremely impressed with her in NXT. And I felt like, oh, when she debuted on the main roster and she was put in a prominent position, I mean, she was really booked prominently to begin with. She and Corbin going up against Becky and Seth for what felt like forever. She was one of the lead acts on the show. I always felt, okay, she has this real life storyline, and she has the background of being a Marine. She is a natural mega babyface. So if they play this right, she can go through the Southern Belle cycle. She's excellent at that. And then we're going to get this great heel turn. And it'll be the, you know, red, white, and blue apple pie and all of that. But I think that she will become now this version of the character that we're seeing, and it'll be great. And unfortunately, it was just booking misstep after booking misstep after after booking misstep, even though it was in a prominent position. And then she left to have her second child and go through the early maternity. So now that she's back, it does feel like an acceleration or a shortcut. It feels like we lost something in experiencing the story of that change, and like whatever it would have been in the storyline that would have triggered her character to switch babyface and go more the direction that we are seeing her now. And I say babyface, but it was so utterly bizarre. Was it last week on SmackDown or the week before when they introduced her just to have her come out and wave to the crowd? and did that whole thing of Samantha Irvin, I believe, saying, you know, please greet Lacey. Lacey herself has asked me to demand that you give her the proper respect. And this is coming right on the heels of yet another one of these videos that, yes, they've done a lot of them, but I go into them rolling my eyes a little bit like, okay, here we go. They are making this a bit long in the tooth now. They are overdoing it. And then Lacey ropes me back in every single time because this is her real story and she's feeling real emotions. And I just think, man, this is, you know what? It's accelerated. It's a shortcut, but it's gonna work. And then they did that. And I don't even know what in the world to think about that. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm DMing Frank Pettiani like, dude, you were right. This is supposed to be a heel. What in the world? And then she comes out tonight. And there's no hint of that at all.
You can't say stand up and applaud for the armed forces or military and have that be a heel promo. You can't do that.
They did what they did with Sergeant Slaughter in 93. I think that was 93. Desert Storm. The era is different now, but I mean, it was very pandering, and she was specifically saying, like, I know that there are armed forces members in the audience now. Please applaud for them. Cameras cutting to the people who are standing up to be recognized. I mean, it was very pandering, and it was that, you know, red, white, and blue apple pie, but I thought she performed it well. So I feel like I would be even higher on it if they hadn't put me on my heels with that weird SmackDown thing. So now I'm just waiting for the other shoe to drop. But macro sense, I am thinking that this is where I have felt for years that her character is destined to end up. And I just hope it clicks because I really responded to the genuine emotion in her finally telling her story as part of her main roster character. And I think that she's got huge potential. I've admired her for quite a while, and I was so disappointed when the main roster thing didn't work out at first through booking and just honestly some uncharacteristic slip-ups, stuff that she was missing on that she never missed on NXT, and that may be big stage jitters or whatever that may have been. But yeah, like, I'm crossing my fingers right now, but the past couple weeks with her have just been bizarre, and I'm trying to sort out exactly what WWE's aims are here with her.
Yeah, I think we all are, and I could imagine Vince McMahon week to week changing his mind on, you know, oh, we have to do this, okay. Oh, no, we're not going to do it. We're going to go back to the original. We're going to make this work. I did not come away from this show with definitive thoughts that she's going heel. I don't know. I have to process this more. And
yeah,
I think there's something there, and they're giving her a lot of time, and she has the components and the ingredients of you know, being a potentially a top act for WWE in the women's division. But I don't know. I just don't know what to say to the, you know, we talk about Cody being kind of heavy-handed in some of the things that they do to promote him. They were doing the same thing with Lacey, but, you know, is she earnest and, you know, a straight shooter? And do fans end up ultimately, you know, going, you know, no, we kind of like her. You know, she is who she is. Mm-hmm. But I don't think ending with a line, you know, there's nobody, I might not be better than the other superstars, but they're sure no better than me. Like, you know, using the superstar, you know, Orwellian proper speak language and the closing phrase, and the problem isn't that she's ending with a catchphrase, because you can end with a catchphrase. The problem is she's saying it like she's just thinking of it now when the words are coming out. You know, like, yeah, you know, I might not be better than other superstars, but they're certainly not better than me. She says it like it's an original thought you just thought of and you're hearing it for the first time. That feels inauthentic. That's different than you have a key catchphrase you end with. So I think one of the little subtle different keys for her going forward is if she is going to end with that, I think she should, you know, there should almost be a wink to the audience, you know, symbolic or literal, which is like, all right, you know, yeah, I, you know what I'm about to say. but it is my mantra. And then say it, but let the fans know I'm not just thinking of this now, and I know you've heard this before, but this is, you know, this is my thing. So anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Tom, anything else I didn't bring up that you really want to bring up? Otherwise, we've gone long, and we can wrap up.
I don't think so. Scrolling through my notes. No, we hit everything.
Cool.
Wow. Yeah,
excellent.
We were thorough.
Excellent. So, yeah, go VIP to hear Tom's shows. Go VIP to hear everything that we do and hear these shows with the ads and plugs removed and gain access to the most in-depth, thorough insider perspective on the last 30-plus years of professional wrestling history, chronicled contemporaneously in real time through our newsletters, our long-form Torch Talks with some of Pro Wrestling's biggest names. You know all that stuff. We'd love to have you as a VIP member. pwtorch.com/govip. And until next time, on behalf of Tom Stout, this is Wade Keller signing off.